to my Fashion Stories Box podcast, a podcast about stories in fashion history. I am Catherine, and I am so glad to welcome you here. Let's discover together interesting facts about fashion and history and fashion history. Today, I wanted to dedicate this episode to a woman who aroused my curiosity the moment I heard about her. Jeanne Toussaint, nicknamed the Panther of Cartier. And for a good reason. She has everything of a romantic heroine. Imagine. She was born in Belgium at the end of the 19th century in a modest environment. And some years later, she is at the creative direction of one of the most famous luxury jewelry houses, Cartier. She counts as her best friend Gabrielle Chanel, and she lived some very passionate love stories. In this episode, we will see how Jeanne Toussaint managed to climb the social ladder in the Paris of the Belle Époque, of the Roaring Twenties, and of the years preceding the Second World War. We will try to learn more on her social background and on her personality, and we will see how she arrived at Cartier's and how she contributed to the current vision we have of this brand. Now, put on your most beautiful jewelry and get ready to travel in time to meet one woman with an extraordinary destiny. Jeanne Toussaint. This name might not ring a bell. Nevertheless, Jeanne Toussaint was a very influential personality in the Parisian high society during the first half of the 20th century, and at her scale, she revolutionized the jewelry's world, at least the Cartier's world. But Jeanne Toussaint, it's also a life full of passions, fights, all under the sign of the Panther. We don't know much on the childhood of the one who was nicknamed Pompon by her sister. A maintained mystery, it seems, in the same manner as the one who will become her best friend, Coco Chanel. Jeanne Toussaint was born on January the 13th, 1887, in the city of Charleroi, in Belgium. Her mother was a lace maker and her father American. She has an older sister, Charlotte. When her father dies, it seems that her mother remarried with a German man who would have abused Jeanne and her sister Charlotte. Many uncertainties, you would say. It seems that Jeanne wasn't very talkative about her past, maybe out of shame, coquetry, or out of will to move forward. According to Pierre Renereau, director of Image, Style and Heritage at Cartier, and quoted in an interview by Madame Figaro published on November the 4th, 2022, the fact that we know so few is symptomatic of her strength. She fought for herself and she never complained. When it comes to fighting, Jeanne seems to have displayed a rock-solid persistence. To escape her family's modest conditions, she goes first to Brussels, where she meets the Count Pierre de Quinsonnas, who lives there in order to avoid military service. The two young people deeply and passionately fall in love with each other. Pierre promises to marry her, a promise he has to break under the pressures from his family. Jeanne doesn't belong to the right social class. And this will be all the tragedy of her life, not belonging to the right social category in order to marry the man she loves. Eventually, she will end up taking her revenge. Even if he can't marry her, Pierre takes Jeanne with him to Paris, where she will become a kept woman. Jeanne is just 16 years old, and she arrives in the Paris of the Belle Époque. She becomes a courtesan, a cocotte, a demi-mondaine, a grande horizontale, a high-status prostitute. All these words more or less pejorative to describe those women kept by their lovers, in general from good families and very wealthy, who can't make them their legitimate wives because of the social prejudice of the time. This social category, tolerated in the Parisian ecosystem, had nevertheless its importance. These women acted as a showcase for the men who kept them and offered them flats, private mansions, and most importantly, luxury jewelry and clothes. Moreover, they made themselves very visible, went to all the trendy places to be seen and noticed by their future clients. They also became sponsors of the arts and they held court. They were their own brand ambassadors and spread their wealth as sommeliers. Their company was looked for their conversation, their beauty, their intelligence, and this little perfume of scandal surrounding them. For the big fashion houses of the time, this cocotte represented a large part of their clientele in an indirect way through the presents their lovers bought for them, as well as in a direct way when they bought for themselves. The ambition of a high-status prostitute? To have a beautiful wedding with one of her wealthy lover from a good family and thus taking a revenge on this stiffed world, which was the high society who looked down on them. This is what would happen to Charlotte, Jeanne's sister, who will manage to marry an English lord and become Lady Whitcomb. Jeanne joins the ranks of the Parisian semi-mondaine, guided by her sister Charlotte. She discovers Cartier's jewelry, first through the gifts from her lovers. She buys some for herself, and then she meets Cartier in flesh and blood. Jeanne crosses Louis Cartier's path for the first time in 1914 at the Maxims, a very famous place to be at that time. And it was love at first sight. Louis Cartier, grandson of the Cartier's jewelry house founder, the oldest of the Cartier brotherhood with Pierre and Jacques, who managed to position the family business as the jeweler of kings and the king of jewelers, Dixit Edward VII of England, renowned businessman, 40-ish, wealthy, considered as one of the most handsome men of Paris, coveted by the fair sex, particularly after his recent divorce from the daughter of the famous couturier Charles Frederick Worth. Francesca Cartier-Bricquel, great-granddaughter of Jacques, the youngest of the Cartier brotherhood, recounts the memories of Jean-Jacques Cartier, her grandfather, in her book The Cartiers, the untold story of the family behind the jewelry empire, in which she describes Louis as follows. Around 30 years old man with blue eyes, dark blonde hair, and a turned-up mustache. To sum up, a charming man with charm, as it seems on the pictures of the time. As for Jeanne, she's described as follows. Always dressed in an impeccable manner, most of the time wearing a pearl necklace around her neck, her dark hair wrapped in a chic turban, Jacques Toussaint was known for her sense of style. As Coco Chanel, she was a strong and independent woman. She wasn't tall, but she had a huge presence. Jeanne, a short woman with an extravert personality, full of energy, mischievous, tremendously charismatic, whose company was looked for by everybody. Muse of artists as Paul Heuliez, Adrien Driant, Giovanni Boldini, or Adolphe de Meyer, best friend of Gabriel Chanel, and gifted with a particular sense of style, which would be known afterwards as the Toussaint taste. Her allure, her impassioned and feline personality, catched the attentions of the heir. A passionate relationship is born, even though on her side, at that time, she was already committed in a relationship with the Baron Pierre-Élie d'Oisel. They will be for each other the biggest love of their lives. But here again, when Louis decides to marry her, the family says no. Her high-status prostitute status fails to win unanimous support in the Cartier's clan, and Louis will end to giving to the family pressure to remarry in 1924 with an Hungarian countess, Jacqueline Almasy. However, he doesn't entirely let Jeanne go. As he can't marry her, he will hire her. Still from Francesca Cartier-Bresquel's book The Cartiers, Jean-Jacques Cartier reports, Jeanne Toussaint was Louis' soulmate. My parents thought he should have married her, that she made him really happy. But there was lots of snobbery at that time. Social class mattered a lot more than today. Grandfather and Uncle Pierre thought that Louis could find a better match, and Uncle Louis was a bit snobbish. He loved mixing with the high society. He maybe thought that Jeanne, with her past, could have ruined his image, but he loved her, this was obvious. Jeanne won't marry Louis Cartier, but they will stay very close until the death of Louis on July the 23rd, 1942, at the age of 67. Jeanne will go back to the Baron Pierre-Élie Doissel, who will end up marrying her in 1954, once again, the family oppositions will be defeated. Jeanne is 67 years old. They will live together until the death of Pierre some years later, in 1959. As I was explaining to you earlier, Jeanne was known for a unique sense of style. She knew intuitively how to marry the colors, forms, and materials. She was also very curious and was interested in what was happening around the world. In the 20s, the Ballet Russe and the Orientalist wave they initiated will inspire her. The attraction from ancient Egypt following the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun in 1922 will fascinate her. India, Japan, the East and the West, the antique and the new, the arts, everything will be worth of interest for Jeanne, and she will put everything in her clothes, accessories, in the decoration of a flat, in the small bags she starts to create to sell them with her friend Coco Chanel, who became the designer of the time, even before working for Cartier. We have to say that Jeanne is a fashionista. She likes to be dressed as per the last fashion. She likes to experiment. She likes beautiful things. She likes to wear the next trend before everybody. She is a visionary. And Louis, as a wise talent scout, wanted to benefit from her aptitudes. Jeanne starts at the 13 Rue de la Paix around 1920. At first, she is in charge to create small bags, activities she was already performing before and for which she earned a pretty good reputation. Starting from 1925, she is in charge of the line S. S for silver, or maybe evening, as S is also for soir in French. And she will create accessories as cigarette holders or powder compacts, very fashionable items during the Roaring Twenties and best partners of the women at that time. Jean-Jacques Cartier reminds of Jeanne Toussaint that way. When Jeanne Toussaint started at Cartier, Louis put her in the handbag section because she was talented to work with fabrics. At the Rue de la Paix, she was renowned for her also miraculous capacity to create two bags from one piece of old brocade or silk. She knew how to cut it in the most efficient manner in order not to lose any centimeter of fabrics. This was worthy of Louis' admiration. She will contribute to the appetite for the Art Deco style and the geometric forms we can find so present in the jewelry and other tiaras created by the House of Cartier at that time. One needs to underline that nominating a woman to run a line was very avant-garde for the decade. Even if the 20s are generally synonymous of more freedom for women, they weren't seen as the equals of men who still remained absolute masters, and particularly more in the jewelry world. However, Jeanne Toussaint is not a woman as any other. She is from the same wood as Gabrielle Chanel, women who started from nothing and who will dominate everything. She is a feminist in a sense, taking the place of a man, having the same powers and even more as a man, playing along the same rules as men, all in the end goal to serve the cause of women, the main target of the house. Jeanne reaches the consecration in 1933 when Louis Cartier, in the verge of leaving for Budapest to live there with his second wife, entrusts her with the position of creative director for the high jewelry. And, of course, not everybody likes it. As for her, Jeanne will put this new power at the service of women by offering them jewelry accessorized innovations allying beauty, originality, comfort and liberty. Jeanne is in the air of the time and perfectly knows how to surf with the trends and the expectations of the society. She wanted to create unique jewelry to transcribe the unique personalities of her clients. Pierre Renaud says about her that she has a singular intelligence because her path is linked with her good understanding of the universes she crosses. And the House of Cartier is the big winner in that. Jeanne doesn't know how to draw. She prefers to show, to explain in three dimensions. In her book The Panther, telling the life of the jewelry creator in a novel way, and which I highly recommend you to read, Stéphanie Dehor, who collaborated with Cartier and interviewed different people who worked with Jeanne Toussaint, explains that she was working with modeling clay and was putting different stones next to each other to translate her ideas. The illustrators of the house, Edmond Forêt, Charles Jacot, Gérard Dessouches and Peter Le Marchand, then drew the jewelry in 2D, which would be after created in the house workshops. The innovative personality of Jeanne blends perfectly with the DNA of Cartier, which motto was, never copy, always create. And Jeanne will create. In her book on the story of her family, Francesca Cartier-Bricquel reports the way Jeanne was seen at work. Those who worked with her systematically tell about her exceptional taste, but also the fact that she liked to be the only one, in the sense that she wanted to be recognized as the driving force of the creative process. And this will create internal conflicts, notably with the illustrator Charles Jacot, with whom the relationships were already tense, and who will even accuse her to claim his creations for herself. Following the movement initiated by the Cartier brothers, Jeanne will innovate, will challenge the craftsmen of her workshops to go beyond what's possible and to always impress. She will ask them to work on a system of invisible settings to put the emphasis on the stones and to add a notion of movement. She will put back yellow-gold in fashion, while preferences were for platinum, a trend launched by Cartier at the beginning of the century. She will mix precious and semi-precious stones to play with the contrast of colors and textures. Volume, movement, mobility of the jewelry created, and the notion of comfort are part of her priorities. Creating spectacular and original pieces is well and good, but not at the expense of comfort of wear. Jewelry is here to underline the women's sensuality and not to wait on their silhouette and to prevent them to move. The 20s and the Art Deco in its geometric forms will play a big part in her inspiration. Then, it will be the Indian iconography, the Orientalism, along the travels and discoveries made by the Cartier brothers. And finally, nature with its flowers and more particularly the animals will become her new obsession. She will ask her team to create a real animal book, including fantastic animals as dragons and real ones as snakes, crocodiles, birds, ladybirds, owls, turtles, and so on. In 1941, under the occupation and while the Cartier London office welcomes the General de Gaulle and his call for resistance, Jeanne Toussaint, to whom Louis entrusted the responsibility of the Paris office before leaving for the States, will also take position. In the windows of the 13 Rue de la Paix, a brooch representing a nightingale in the colors of the French flag in lapis lazuli, coral, and sapphire, imprisoned in a golden cage and called l'oiseau en cage, the bird in cage, will catch the eyes of the Gestapo. Jeanne Toussaint is arrested and commanded to explain herself on the political meaning of this brooch seen as a provocation by the Nazi occupying forces. She will justify her choice by telling that she likes birds and that this brooch is in fact a tribute to Yvonne Printemps, nicknamed the Nightingale, and for whom she already created bracelet charms in the shape of birds in 1933. She is questioned about the activities of the House of Cartier in London and is suspected of resistance. She will be freed some days following her arrestation, thanks to the intervention of her friend Gabrielle Chanel, who displayed her open inclinations to the Nazi ideology and who had personal relationships with certain high-ranked members. At the Liberation, L'Oiseau en Cage will be matched with another brooch called L'Oiseau Libéré, the Freed Bird, representing the same nightingale, but with the doors of its golden cage open. And the panther in all of that. Indeed, the panther is intimately linked with the House of Cartier to the point that it became the symbol of the brand. But the panther was also Jeanne's animal fetish. Her sister, her friends, used to call her Pompon as the diminutive for panther. In some occasions, she was even called Pompon Toussaint. This animal seemed to transcribe best a personality, a passionate, uncompromising character, a feline side, intimating sometimes inaccessible, cold at first, her grace and elegance. When Jeanne meets Louis, the panther has already been adapted in jewelry pieces, with its fur recreated with white diamonds and black onyx, for a wristwatch in 1914 and then for a pendant watch in 1915. And in 1917, Louis Cartier offers to Jeanne a cigarette holder figuring a panther. It's an illustration of Georges Barbier ordered by Louis Cartier for the creation of an invitation card in 1914, which will make the panther part of the brand's iconography. Their invitation represents an elegant woman with a black panther in the background. It seems that the demand to add a panther was already linked with the personality of Jeanne. Louis would nickname her his little panther, as she was always wearing a panther fur coat. But we need to wait for 1948 to have the version of the Cartier's panther as we know it. The drawing is realized by Peter Le Marchand following the indications of Jeanne. The panther is available first as a brooch in enameled yellow gold with an emerald of 116.74 carats. The client, the Duchess of Windsor, Wally Simpson. The latter will order another panther brooch in 1949, the very famous version of a seated panther on a cabochon sapphire, for which I found the following description. Standing on a cabochon sapphire of 152.35 carats, adorned by a paving of diamonds spotted with sapphires, the animal is imbued with ferocity and sensuality. These panther brooches will be followed by panther bracelets in 1958, then by cuffs, necklaces, pendants, rings, watches, handbags, claps, scarves, glasses, frames, and even a perfume. The panther is unmissable, to the point that Jean Cocteau will say to Jeanne, "You launched a fashion, I will forge a word." Elegant and wealthy women are definitively affected by pantheromania. A real technical achievement to reproduce the aspect of the fur, the muscles giving an impression of movements and volume, the panther of Cartier sums up the knowledge and know-how of the house's workshops. The most prominent personalities will wear it: Wally Simpson, the Duchess of Windsor, as the origins of the passion for the panthers of Cartier; Daisy Fellow, Nina Aga Khan, Maria Felix, Barbara Hutton, and more recently, the actress Vanessa Kirby. The panther embodies a savage figure, independent, sensual, free, powerful, feminine and bold, at the image of its instigator. Wearing a jewelry representing this animal is symbolically absorbing the virtues and qualities we associate to it. Now, the emblem of Cartier, the panther, aims at reflecting the contemporary values and the vision the jewelry house has of women. A woman definitely modern, imposing herself and freeing herself from the society constraints. For that matter, Pierre Henrot says, there is one panther for every woman. And all of this thanks to a woman who imposed herself in a man's world and who took all the challenges of the society of her time, Jeanne Toussaint. What a life she had, isn't it? Jeanne dies in 1978 at the respectable age of 91 years. After having lived a full life, crossed the Paris of the Belle Époque, the First World War, the Roaring Twenties, the occupations, the liberation. She will meet the most prominent personalities of her time. She will love and be loved passionately. And she will leave a permanent mark on the jewelry world. A ultimate tribute from the House of Cartier by Arnaud Carrez, Communication Director for Cartier, has quoted an article from Vogue France. Jeanne Toussaint, it's before anything a woman who revolutionized the contemporary jewelry. Thank you very much for having listened to this episode of my Fashion Storiesburg podcast. I hope you really enjoyed discovering the life of the woman who was called the Coco Chanel of jewelry. If you want to deepen some elements of Jeanne Toussaint's life or of the Cartier's family, you will find in the description of this episode links to the two main books I mentioned, The Cartiers, The Untold Story of the Family Behind the Jewelry Empire, available in French and English by Francesca Cartier-Briquel, and La Panthère, only available in French, by Stéphanie Dehors. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, to connect with me on Instagram and Facebook to complete the podcast with some visuals. And if you like my podcast, feel free to leave a comment or a review. I would really appreciate it. I am Catherine and this is my Fashion Stories Box podcast, a podcast about stories in fashion history. See you next time for a new Fashion Story Box.